So there's two types of people when it comes to showing up for class. Those who show up on time, which is most of us here, I'm sure, and those who show up late. And people have said, you know, you're hiding our faces now, I guess, right? So maybe there's one or two of you who showed up late for class every now and then. I want to share with you a story about a man named George Dantzig. Maybe you've heard of him. He was a student in the 30s, and he showed up late one day for his college math class. And he showed up, and he saw two math equations written on the board. And so he quickly wrote them down, and he took them home and started working on these problems. And he spent 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks he spent trying to figure out the two problems that were on the board. And finally, after 6 weeks, he figured it out. He figured out the answer. He checked and double-checked and triple-checked his answer. And he still wanted credit. He thought, maybe my professor will be gracious to me, and he will give me some credit for this homework assignment, even though I'm 6 weeks late. So he took it to his professor's office. He knocked on the door. He handed him the homework. He said, I'm so sorry. I know it's really late. Here are the two homework assignments that were on the board 6 weeks ago. Will you take this for credit? So he looked at him. He looked at George. He looked at him. Looked at the student. He said, you know, George, I wrote these on the board 6 weeks ago as two examples of impossible math problems. No one had ever been able to solve these math problems before. And I wrote them on the board as an illustration, and you have solved them. And to which George reportedly looked at his professor and said, well, they did seem a little harder than usual. So George Dantzig did something impossible, it seemed, these impossible math problems. He figured them out after some time. And today we're in another impossible situation. Daniel is placed in an impossible situation where something is about to happen to him. He's about to be killed, even though he has done nothing wrong. He has done nothing wrong. He is at the whim of the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, who Jeff introduced us to last week, who has a bad dream. And because the king has a bad dream and his magicians won't interpret it the way that he wants it interpreted, he says, to death with all of you. I'm just going to kill all of the wise people of my country. So Daniel is placed in this impossible situation today. And the idea for today is this, that we serve a God that can do the impossible. Is that good news for anybody? Yeah? We serve a God who can do the impossible. That is the good news of today. And Daniel is going to find that out today as he deals with King Nebuchadnezzar. So I didn't make you stand to read the passage, so it's very long. So we're just going to work through it. It's on the back of your bulletin if you want to follow along. It begins with verses 1 through 3. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and it says this, in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. He has this dream. It sounds like he had dreams. He continually had these dreams that troubled him and bothered him. And so he wants to know. He calls in the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, astrologers, all people we met last week, the best of the land, those who could interpret for the king what was going on. And he wants to know what these terrible dreams mean and what they have to do with him. So verse 4. Then the astrologers answered the king, May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream and we will interpret it. The king replied to the astrologers, This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. That escalated quickly, didn't it? But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me. So again they replied, Let the king tell his servants the dream and then we will interpret it. Then the king answered, I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." So they want to know the dream before they interpret the dream. That seems like a reasonable thing, I guess. Except King Nebuchadnezzar is kind of caught on to their schemes. That they always say yes to the king. Whatever the king wants to hear, we're going to tell the king what he wants to hear. So if he can tell us his dream first, we'll interpret it in a way that the king wants to hear, that saves our heads and gives us great glory so that the king will be happy with us. These people, the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, assistants, they have made a living of conspiring together for the favor of the king so that they could live better off. This is not a new problem for today that we see around the world. This is a problem as old as Scripture. People in places of authority using that authority, pulling from the king or the ruler or the president or whatever. All across the world we see it. Trying to get themselves favor in that way. It's a classic problem. These are the yes men. "Yes, king, we will tell you what's going on. Yes, king, just tell us that dream. I'm sure between the four of us, we can interpret this together. Absolutely, king." They've made a living off the favor of the king, but for whatever reason, the king is about to shut it down right now. He says, no, I know what you're doing. I know what you have been doing. You tell me the dream first, and then interpret it for me, and then we'll figure out what's going on. Verse 10. "The astrologers answered the king, 'There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks.'" That's the first true thing they said. There's nobody on earth that can read your mind, King Nebuchadnezzar. I'm positive of that. "No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among the humans." The king has asked an impossible thing. "Read my mind and then tell me my dream, and then interpret it for me." He has asked an impossible thing, and it looks like they're fat living high off the king. It looks like it's about to come to an end because the king has asked for an impossible thing. Now, here's the thing. Daniel is also a wise man. Daniel is also one of the people going through this training, as we heard last week. So his head is on the line too here. He is at risk. So Daniel, who hasn't even been introduced yet, he's in trouble as well. But he serves a God that can do the impossible, as we'll see in a minute. So verse 12, "This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death." Daniel has done nothing wrong. He hasn't even been mentioned in this chapter until right now. And the first mention of his name, he is on death row. The death penalty is staring him in the face. He is about to be killed for something he did not do. His head is on the chopping block. So in the next few verses is where we're going to pull out our ideas here for today. Daniel knows one thing. He serves the God who serves a God who can do the impossible. And so because he knows that, he does three things in the next three verses that show his faith in God and how God delivers him from this impossible situation. The first thing he does is this. He responds with wisdom and tact. Verses 14 through 15. Let me read. "When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, 'Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?' Then Arioch explained the matter to Daniel." He responds with wisdom and tact. He's in danger of becoming a victim for something outside of his control. And when he's in this situation, he responds in a godly way, with wisdom, with tact, with patience, with peace. No anger. I'm certain he was afraid. Absolutely certain. No aggressive behavior. Perhaps there's a time for that. But in this instance, Daniel gives a godly response of wisdom and tact, of understanding and counsel before the king. And he goes and he asks the question. He wants to know, why is this happening? Why did the king decree this to happen? It's a response that is measured and understanding. And I was thinking of what to say here. You know, I was thinking of an illustration, and it just kind of dawned on me as I was sitting there thinking that this has to be a sermon point in our day and age today. Because we've lost the ability to speak with wisdom and tact, it appears, in our world today. Everything is either one extreme or the other, and we lost the ability to speak as Daniel has spoken here. We live in a world where the calm response is all but gone. It appears to have vanished into the wind. We don't know how to get it back. And we got to start by pointing the finger at ourselves, right? If we learn nothing from the Sermon at the Mount, Jesus tells us, look at the speck in your own eye, because that's affecting how you look at everything else. Check out that speck first before you point the finger. Now, certainly there's a place for fear and anger and crying out. God welcomes all those emotions that we have. But Daniel responds with wisdom and tact in the face of an impossible situation. Proverbs 12:18. The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. This week started Monday with a terrible, evil shooting that happened. A man was shot, a representative was shot on Capitol Hill, and as I foolishly went to Facebook to hear more about it, I was stunned, I was hurt, I was grieved over the reckless words that you saw left and right. Well, what kind of person was he? And not just from anybody, from Christians. People who profess Jesus as their Lord with these reckless words of judgment. The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Shooting is the horrible thing. The shooting was a horrible, evil thing. The answer is never hurt people I don't like. See, Daniel is in this tough spot. He could have gone out there and hurt somebody he didn't like. But he responds with wisdom and tact. Later this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whenever it was, there was the hearing, the result of the healing for Castile, Lando Castile, was held. And that was met with other responses in other ways. I don't want to get into either of those too much, but the point is, reckless words pierce like swords. But wisdom brings healing. Wisdom brings healing. It doesn't matter if it's a protester or a politician. Jesus does not tolerate that evil as we lash out in different ways. And too much of that rhetoric has come up. And I think we can find an example from Daniel here of wisdom, of wise words bringing healing. If he had lashed out at that king, what would have happened? I don't think he would have had a chance to go and say, hey, give me a chance for God to answer. But he responds with wisdom and tact in this situation. So for us to consider ourselves, how have our words been reckless before? How have my words been reckless? Have I said reckless things in all matters, any matter? Have they pierced somebody that I should have provided healing to instead? You know, church, if we're not people who bring healing into this world through the blood of Jesus Christ, then what are we doing? Then what are we doing? Why are we bothering to gather together if we don't bring a message of healing and of restoration? Reckless words pierce, but wise words bring healing. And because of Daniel's wise response, he gets to sit with the king for a conversation. Verse 16. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so he might interpret the dream for him. Second thing Daniel does is he goes to the king directly. He says, King, give me a chance. Give me a chance to interpret this dream. Give my God a chance to do the impossible. How often have we written off things without giving God a chance to do the impossible? A relationship in our life, a situation at work, a financial need, we've written it off and said, well, That was terrible. But Daniel gives his God a chance to do the impossible. Remember, Jeff told us last week, he's a teenager. He's 14, 15, 16 years old. And he's going to the king and asking for an audience a second time now. Saying, King, you know, I don't really agree with what you're doing. Let me tell you what we should do. Remember, the first time was over the food that they were supposed to eat. This time it's over this judgment. He knows that his God has been faithful to him, and he desires to give his God a chance to speak again. I sent out a reflection this week. I was in Washington, D.C. last week, spending time at Capitol Hill and various other places with CCDA. I left a reflection on the welcome table, so you can grab one if you don't get email this week. But we got to spend some time in Capitol Hill. Has anyone been to Washington, D.C.? Capitol Hill, a few people. If you go in there, we went into the Capitol building, we went into all these buildings, and it was amazing the beauty of these buildings. You got tall pillars, you got marble floors, everyone's dressed nice, all the men wear suits, they look nice, all the women have skirts and heels, and they're walking around looking all professional. And they told us that, you know, I was kind of dressed like this for most of the time, but they said, no, you got to bring a suit, you got to bring a suit, because we got to look good on Capitol Hill. I said, okay, all right, I guess we'll look good. And they weren't joking, everyone looks so nice. It gives this perception of power. It gives this image of authority. When you walk in there, you just feel that power in the marble floors, in the columns, in the people that are walking around. You know that the leader of the free world, the president, is sitting just a few blocks away. It's like, wow, this is amazing. This is amazing. And so we got back after our trip late that night, and we started reflecting on our time there. And one person, he raised his hand. He said, you know, all of this, it's just false power. Everything we saw is not true power. It's not going to last forever. In fact, Washington, D.C. has one of the highest turnover rates of people in the country, because as a new administration comes in, they get rid of people and they get out, and then new people come in, and then 4 years later, a new person comes in, back and forth. He said, this is all just false power. It looks great, it feels powerful, but it's not true power. Our God is true power. So Daniel walks into the court of the king, and maybe there was tall columns, maybe there was marble floors, maybe it was beautiful, and he could have become overwhelmed walking into that space and said, wow, this is power. But instead, he trusted in his God, who is true power. He did not become overwhelmed by his situation. He did not look at the king and say, oh, that's a great king, I better respect him. He says, I'll still respect it, but my God is where true power comes from. And so he confidently walked in and spoke to the king in this difficult time. And last thing he does, verse 17. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. He goes back to his brothers and asks them to pray for him, to pray with him, together as a community. The most important tool that God has given us is the prayer of the community of believers, that we can gather together and pray for one another. That's exactly what Daniel does. He knows he's in an impossible situation, and he also knows he serves a God who can do the impossible, and that he has other brothers, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, their other names, right? He knows they're there, and they will pray with him. So they sit together all day and all night, and they pray, and they pray, and they pray. I see there the importance of having that community that you can go to and say, pray for me. Plead to God for me. I am in an impossible circumstance. I have no money. My house is falling apart. My relationship is falling apart. Whatever it is, go to that community. Say, please, plead to God for me. I need God to act on this impossible situation. And that's what Daniel does. And I'm not talking about coming to church, because that's good too. We all need to come to church and have that prayer time. I'm talking about a community of people that you are close with, that you can go to, speak to, and they speak truth into you as well. Our grow groups just finished up a month or two ago. We're going to start grow groups again, these small groups. I encourage every single person to be a part of a grow group. to come together, to fellowship, to share life together. So Daniel does the only thing he knows how to do. He goes to these people and he says, let's pray. Let's plead for mercy from God. You can't do this Christian walk alone. It's not possible. People love to say, I don't need church, I have Jesus. Well, you know, that's not quite right. It's like saying 1 + 1 = 3. It doesn't quite compute. We need each other as we need Jesus. We need each other as we need Jesus. The importance of the community that Daniel had. They plead out to God in verse 19. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. They spent day and night crying out to God as a community together. And God answers their plea. I'm going to invite Naomi to come up. She's going to share a testimony about community, about love, about, I don't know, I'm just throwing words out now, but I know a little bit of what you're going to share. So come on up and just share what's on your heart with us. Thank you. Here we go.